IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 118 of the Killing It Podcast. This is Carl, and I'm joined today by Dave and Ryan. How are you two gentlemen today?
Really good.
Excellent. And I will say, as the world turns and unfortunately larger and larger sections of it burn, quite literally, up here in the Pacific Northwest, we are looking at the next 3 days of triple digit temperatures. So all I got to say is, for all you people that are used to 100 degrees and think, oh, it's dry heat, it's fine, it's whatever. Those of us up here in the Pacific Northwest, we stay inside when it goes above 85. And it's about to be 102 in Seattle this weekend.
So, welcome to the club.
Yeah,
it's a gorgeous 75 in your nation's capital today.
This is the thing. We didn't ever intend for this to become the weather report, but there are times when it has a direct impact on your life with the temperature and the cicadas and all of the things that we have to deal with now that we're actually going back outside into the world on a regular basis.
Hey, I went away for the weekend. Stayed in a hotel, like, and it was legitimately the first nights I'd spent outside of the house since this all started.
Woo-hoo.
So finally, we crossed that line. We went away for my wife's birthday. We went with some friends up to a lake resort up in Western Maryland, which was gorgeous, and the weather was great, and it was still hovering around 70, 72, like, all weekend. Like, we're in prime, beautiful summer right
it's
now.
It's just like being normal.
Exactly. It's just like being normal. It's pretty.
See,
awesome.
That's the thing, right? It you never know what you've got till it's gone. And so now, even simple things like just going to eat on a patio outside of a restaurant, that's a very good celebration these days. But I've been to soccer game, baseball game. I've been to like large group gatherings and a family wedding. I've got a whole list of things that I really miss and want to get back to eventually. So hopefully it doesn't stay above 100 degrees and not
I have
in the process.
Concert tickets next month. I'm so excited. I'll do my baseball game starting for next week, and then we get into actual concerts. So it's back feeling normal again. It's
exactly.
Pretty awesome.
So one of the good things that come out of all this is, at least in Sacramento, you know, they dramatically expanded outdoor seating for lots of things, and now they're saying, hey, you know, should we close this back up now? And all the restaurant owners are like, no. We totally love having all this outdoor seating, right? There was no good reason not to have it before. So just let us keep it. So
yeah, entire city blocks should just be blocked off with no car traffic so that we can set tables and chairs out in the street and enjoy eating outside.
We've actually
there's no thematic change here at all. No thematic change. Everyone totally going to be the way it was.
This podcast is sponsored by the Small Biz Thoughts technology community. Check us out at smallbizthoughts.org. Forms, templates, and checklists are just the start. Our community includes all of the best-selling books on managed services in all available formats. Plus, free training, members-only programs, and the best business training available to managed service providers anywhere. Plus, we have weekly live members-only Zoom calls. The average member saves more than 200% of their membership cost each year. We are totally dedicated to your success. Just because you're in business for yourself doesn't mean you have to go it alone. Join us today at smallbizthoughts.org.
So our first topic, I want to dive in on Apple and healthcare, because Apple has apparently took over a health clinic, like took over one of the clinics right by their campus and put in an Apple employee doctor and put their own employees into place and tested plans for the delivery of primary care of healthcare. They were trialing out, and the efforts have sort of stalled because they're still questioning the data collected through the service. And their idea being that they're going to focus on integrating data collected from Apple Watch with clinical care and offering a subscription-based program for personalized care. They took over an employee health clinic and used it as a test site. I want to throw out there a ruckus decision of how do we feel about tech companies like Apple taking over healthcare?
The weird part is that the transition from Apple Watch to data is fairly smooth. And if they even had an online place where you would go and it would say, here's your Apple Watch data and here's all this other related data that we can collect and here's our recommendation, I'd kind of be okay with that. When they jump the shark and basically get into a completely unrelated business, like the fact that you have a watch really doesn't qualify you to open up a doctor's office. I wonder whether they just have too much money and have lost focus on what they do for a living.
Well, I think they have too much demand for more services. So when you get to a certain size, the only way to continue accelerating growth is find really large markets and move into it. I'll actually admit that I love disruption of healthcare because that is a horrible industry in the U.S. For the way, and it is totally deserving of disruption.
All disruption is welcome.
Right. And so if you've got a hungry tech industry looking for new spaces, I'm kind of okay with them disrupting. I am not sure how I feel about other players in this. This might be, you know, if you said Apple and Microsoft were involved in healthcare, I'm less scared than say, oh, I don't know, Amazon and Facebook when I think and Google. So, you know, for me, it's I definitely want it to be disrupted. I'm not sure which players I'm comfortable with.
Well, and this is the thing, right? In the conversion of a few random acts that became a trend that might actually become a new industry disrupting what we currently know as healthcare. I think we've all appreciated over the last year and a half the increase in the ability to participate in telemedicine visits. I can see my doctor without getting in my car and driving across town, whether it's a primary care physician or any other form of medicine. There's certain things they need to be present to perform, and there are other things that can be done remotely. Well, telemedicine is interesting. Digital medicine is infinitely more interesting. Dave, you mentioned the Apple Watch and the amount of data that they track. I occasionally will go in there and look and see what it knows about me. And every time I do, I am reliably blown away by how much they know about me. And if that data were actually usable or available to a healthcare provider, how much more personalized and real-time and meaningful my healthcare experience would actually be. Like, it's not just that they can track all of this data, but are there any doctors in the world who are presently set up to receive and utilize that data? I don't think they are. Well, and if Apple can just, even just for the sake of prototyping it, right, step over there, show the clinical side what it would look like, and then go, here's a franchise model. All y'all go do this thing yourselves. That could be a very good thing. I'm okay with Apple's approach to extending data into healthcare. What I'm not okay with is, and you mentioned it specifically, Amazon has an approach to where they just have enough market heft that they just want to consume the healthcare industry and then offer it as a competitive alternative, not innovating on anything necessarily, just a competitive price undercut, the way that they do in retail, the way that they do in grocery, in a lot of other industries. I'm not okay with that approach.
Interestingly, this is all of Apple's iOS 15 announcements are about exactly what you just talked about, the ability for a individual to share that data with a doctor that is set up for this. Interestingly, I do concierge medicine because I'm already wanted to experiment with that level of interaction with my doctor. My doctor is on one of the six supported platforms. And I have actually already been talking with him saying, I am comfortable with being your first patient trying this out as you figure this bit out. I am comfortable sharing that data with you because, by the way, I have 5 years worth of health data that my Apple Watch has collected on fitness and all of the bits. And yes, it adds new data with each bit, but I've got all this historical data. We can now import this in. You can get access to that in real time. And by the way, link that with your regular clinical stuff. In theory, this is just a matter of setting it all up. I'll be able to report back about how it works and, with an actual physician.
Again, I like all of those pieces. The only part that just seems like a disconnect for me, as you know, think about it, like as an Apple investor, are they like sticking to their knitting? Or are they just saying, hey, we can go buy this market because we are big enough, we can do whatever we want. And is that a good thing in the long run? I mean, I just want to point out one of the lessons for IT service providers. Dave sort of touched on this, but let me be super clear. There's a point at which the only way for you to make more money is to offer more services, not more hardware and software.
Right.
So even Apple finds that they have to offer services to expand. But it, you know, unless they like bought some other company, it doesn't seem to me like they're the right fit.
So let me challenge that a little bit and say, like, if you believe Apple's core competency is devices, right, which has an element to say like, okay, this is a space healthcare can be in, but also customer service and data management. There's a pretty strong argument that those are skills necessary in healthcare. That one of the number one things that bother me about the healthcare experience are the customer management experience, right? And the way the systems work in terms of dealing with me. Apple can fix all of that. Oh, and by the way, they have the giant piles of cash to fix the insurance side of things too, because they could redetermine the way that they bill and subscribe. They've got the heft to do it. So I guess I'm sort of throwing back and saying like, well, Carl, I hear you, but maybe it's not as much of a stretch as you might think if those are their core competencies.
Well, I think I buy into their competencies, including data and devices. I've not actually heard a lot of raving customer service stories about how good Apple's customer service is.
Yeah, see, I agree with you. I don't think it's directly customer service. I think it's more accurately customer experience, because the one thing that every Apple customer who has a MacBook and an iPad and an iPhone and an Apple Watch and, right? The one thing that we all will readily acknowledge is I take a photo on my phone and it's instantly available. It's stored in the cloud. It's available on my other devices. I think maybe what the logical extension for Apple's business is here is that their domain expertise is not devices. It's not data management. It is integrated digital experiences. And if that is focused on entertainment, on music, on telecommunications, on business computing, on et cetera, then the integrated digital experience of digital medicine, that goes perfectly in line with that universe of what their capabilities are.
Well, we'll see. Watch this space.
I wonder whether they will do what several other large organizations have done when they have too much money, is say at some point, yeah, you know what? That turned out to be boring. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah, these are problems that I wish I was trying to solve in my own world. Let's jump into our second topic, guys, because it is one of the things that was pinging in my brain during our first topic conversation. Digital integrated experiences are really cool as long as the data you contribute to that environment is actually private. And we all know that's just not true. And so the article that we're linking to here for our second topic is about a proposed new agency at the federal government level, specifically focused on the idea of creating and enforcing standards and experiences around data privacy. Now, what I will say is, I don't think at the outset anybody is thrilled with the idea of yet another federal government agency trying to solve anything. But I will absolutely admit, so far, I've not yet seen any other entity that's capable of dealing with this scale of problem. Privacy, everybody gets emotional about it. We all believe that it ought to be true. And yet we continue to live in a world where it is just fundamentally not presently available. You know your data is out there. It's been bought and sold on the dark web 500 times. You know this. Is the government the right place to solve this problem? And any advice you guys would have for the new cabinet level position that might be responsible for data privacy?
Oh, I'm all for this. So, like, look, data protection agency. Like, first off, it's cool, right? Like, it sounds awesome. But let's actually highlight. We always talk about the fact that you need specialized skills to understand technology when you're implementing at a governmental level. The only way that happens is dedicate resources to it. And thus, the way to do that is actually have dedicated humans focused on that. One of the easiest way to do that is create an organization. Like, that then their mission is doing this. We talk all the time about data being the new oil and the value of data and all that kind of stuff. Well, we regulate all kinds of other things that have value. We have agreed there are certain out-of-bounds things. You need some law enforcement-style agency to do it. And last I checked, unless you get experts on it, you don't get particularly good results. So at a high level, in theory, I'm all for this, right? The trick then, as anybody knows on this, is then funding and the way that it comes together. But in theory, this is the right way to solve it.
So I think what's interesting about this topic is that all, so far, 99% of the action that we've actually seen on this within the United States has been at the state level. And so the states are moving on it. The states are doing things. The states are setting standards. Some of those conflict with each other, right? So, you know, don't browse my web page because it's based in California and now you're subject to all of our laws. But at the federal level, I don't know that there is the competence you're looking for. Maybe it's the place where they will gather that competence. I'd really like to see them start with setting standards and not being an enforcement agency. That's the part that just to me instantly creates another layer of, oh my God, paperwork. And I don't think it removes, eliminates, or clarifies anything at the state and local levels. It just adds more stuff. So I would want to tiptoe into this and let them demonstrate that they can do it effectively. Because as a rule, federal
government is not the most effective. To be fair, they're starting on really big things. They're starting on things like mergers that include data of more than 50,000 users. Like, you know, really, really high, big kind of stuff that does theoretically cross state boundaries. Like, you know, we need to have somebody that's dealing with that stuff at that level.
Yeah, I'm not questioning the state boundaries piece. I mean, clearly everything on the internet crosses state boundaries. So that's, you know, they've met the requirements there.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is you talk about what I was focusing on is you're tiptoeing in. I'm saying that by some of the things being starting off as these really big things, as opposed to, it's not saying like, oh, we're going to do every data privacy thing at all. It's here's the big areas that we're going to focus on that are these particularly large areas of enforcement. That is a good way of tiptoeing in to figuring this out.
Well, and this is a question of size mattering. Where
we are, he not, said it.
Yeah, I know. We are not dealing with a few small companies doing a few small things that may pioneer a new trail of data vulnerability. We're talking the largest businesses on the planet that are presently and aggressively blazing whole new trails because there are no legal boundaries. And to your point, Carl, until there are standards defined of what is okay and what is not okay, you can't enforce anything. You can't just say that wasn't nice or I didn't like it. There has to be a standard established, which requires some concerted effort, but then there will need to be a central place of significant scale that can actually do the enforcement. Because again, you're not talking about you and me and Dave trying to control our own use of people's data. We're talking, what, 80% of the stock market gain in value in the last year went to eight companies, of which seven of them would be specifically focused on by this particular agency. I think that this is one of those things where I agree with you, Carl. I don't need more bureaucracy. I don't believe that the current employee base of the federal government has the requisite knowledge. But if they built this thing, maybe they could attract that talent and then
have
the
heck. Except I think maybe I'm being too philosophical here. I would like to take a big step back and say, have we stumbled our way into a conglomeration of a mass of unconnected things that we somehow call privacy? Or is there any actual understanding of what is privacy and what needs to be protected? And I'll give you a couple of examples. So first of all, I think I should be able to opt out of HIPAA. Like, I don't care if you know that I have a surgery on my toe. Like, I just don't care. You can spread that all over the world. I also think that there are things in my life that are nobody's business, and I don't think anybody should have access to them or be able to make money off of them, right? Now, where you draw those lines is going to be different. You may not care about the privacy of this or that or the other thing. Why do we care about privacy? Is it simply to keep people from stealing our identity? Well, there are other ways to deal with that, including making it much more difficult to open up credit card accounts in somebody's name.
Yeah, but right? Carl, you can opt out of HIPAA. You control who gets that data, so you can tell anyone you want, and you can authorize someone else to
Kaiser, hey, don't worry about my records. I don't care.
Hold on. That's a Kaiser thing, not a law thing.
I know. I could publish my medical record myself.
Well,
keep this whole industry from applying laws to my data.
Well, true. But what I'm also saying is there is a difference between what the law says and the way they've implemented it. You can tell Kaiser that they can disclose your information. The fact their systems can't do it, that's a different statement. And so I want to separate out the law and the structure for enforcement.
No, but that's actually a perfect example of, we have privacy laws about real estate and finances and, you know, healthcare and, you know, on and on and on. But it's all been this conglomeration of things where if anybody says the word privacy, everybody votes for it and we got a new law. And
well, fair enough.
Not sort of a purpose.
Well, but by the way, I believe we're making an argument for having actual centralized people working on this and doing the definitions. So I'm going to circle it back around and say,
or not.
I believe one of the ways that we have to do is if we want to address it, as I always say, if you don't want stuff dumped into the water system, you got to have guidelines. The way to simplify that is to bring some of it together, and we have to figure out at what level and where that happens. I tend to believe some of this stuff happens at the federal level now.
Well, and what we all know for sure, well-intentioned or otherwise, whoever was the lobbying group that influenced the actual development of existing regulatory frameworks, what we would all agree about, whether they were good, bad, or otherwise, they're all reasonably toothless, right? Because there's nobody with a great big stick who has the central authority to evaluate, to identify problems, and to enforce the rules or punish the breaking of those rules. I think there's two issues here. A, what is the definition of privacy and why does it matter? And then B, how do we actually enforce this stuff? I agree with Carl. Step number one, let's have some standards.
Well, yeah. So the takeaway here for providers is you need to be watching this stuff because it's changing, but it influences what your customers do. You need to be keeping an eye on the way this all flows out because it's becoming pretty apparent that something is going to happen. So that's why you need to watch it.
And what we've mentioned about 1,000 times on this show is it's coming, right?
Exactly.
So regulation is coming. All right. So our final topic today, we thought we'd get a little bit lighter, but focus on one of our favorite topics, which is artificial intelligence, and another one of our favorite topics, which is beer.
Exactly. The moment you put beer on the agenda, I was like, yes, please, sign me up for this topic.
So if you're not familiar with TalkWalker, TalkWalker is an alert system that you can put in an alert and say, I want to search for IT service provider or managed services or security or ransomware, whatever. And then you'll get a daily alert about things that it found on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and our blogs and news articles and everything. And it basically works by taking artificial intelligence and trying to figure out, is somebody actually talking about what you think they're talking about? So they use their AI technology to evaluate comments on the internet about breweries and then compile a top 20 or top 50 most loved breweries based on the expressions of joy and appreciation that people had on the internet. I think this is pretty cool technology. Finally, you found something useful to do with AI.
Well, I think it's a fascinating application of the technology because it's showing you that AI is not just for those antiseptic applications of machine learning where it spits out this is the correct piece of data that you ought to be focused on. It ought to be able to evaluate and measure and identify highs and lows in actual human experiences. Unfortunately, I mean, the AI doesn't get to experience the emotion of joy, but it could certainly apply a set of attributes to identify it, whether in written or spoken language, in emoticons, in any form of human communication. If they can identify that and then tell you what is it that you are doing right or wrong and allow us to focus more on an accurate evaluation of whether people like what they're going through. I mean, I totally get that in the brewery world. I would also love to see that applied to my cable internet provider. I would love to see that to apply to an awful lot of other industries where joy is not what I would associate in the emotional rainbow with those guys. But I mean, call center technology has been implementing AI for the purpose of measuring customer sentiment for a number of years now. That concept out to the broader world at a mass level like this, that's very powerful.
Well, so remember for our listeners, one of the reasons why they do reports like this is to do a relatable example of how the technology is used. You know, so for example, the experience of the brewery and their Christmas ale, this is a very relatable example. That is why you're supposed to latch onto it. So I want to make sort of two quick points around that. The first is I'm totally on board with the technology and the way this is used. I will always say add on the make sure you look for the ways it could be used badly. Like there's all kinds of implications of the way this could go bad. The point I want to make on this is oftentimes we overcomplicate the examples or the description of the way we talk about things with customers. Use this as the type of example to make things very relatable to your customers. And for me, that was the takeaway, is we're having this AI conversation, but it makes a ton of sense to me when it's about understanding which beer was like the most popular and most talked about online. That makes the technology implementation very relatable. There's so much in tech that we're really, really bad at doing this on, and spending more time here, from my perspective, is what the takeaway was.
There's also some really good branding information here in terms of it can do you no harm if your brand is loved, right? If your brand is hated, that's also going, I mean, they could have gone the other way, right? They could have found your cable company. But instead, focusing on love actually focuses on many positive things that people are trying to bring out with their brands. We started by talking about Apple. Dave loves Apple. So by default, he's predisposed to be okay with new services from Apple, right? Other people love Alexa or Amazon or whatever. I don't know that anybody loves Facebook. But let the research begin. Anyway, bottom line is, it's kind of interesting to see new ways of using technology to look at stuff that, as Ryan said, it's not as sterile as, you know, oh, did this meet certain criteria? Well, no. Like, what does joy look like? What does appreciation look like when people just are doing whatever they do on the internet?
See, and this is the thing, right? In terms of two very practical takeaways that I have here, you, I, and everybody listening to this program needs to think about what are the meaningful business outcomes that you can deliver with technology. Do your customers actually pay you because you are really good at monitoring and managing network and server and storage apparatus? Or do they actually just want to be able to do their jobs without disruption, without confusion, without loss of pertinent data, or the inability to connect and communicate with customers? You do not sell the thing you sell the outcome that comes from it. And anything that could be attached to a proposal you could submit to a customer that says, hire me, and for X amount of dollars every single month, I will perform whatever secret voodoo I do with my technology services, and the outcome will be people will love your brand, and we can measure and verify that. Holy crap, you could charge a lot for that service. That is a meaningful business outcome. We should all think about that. The second tactical takeaway that I have, apparently you got to get in line really early in order to get any of that Christmas ale that they are featuring in this article. So I need some of my friends and acquaintances in the Great Lakes area where this happens to give me a heads up when that's happening, because now I really want to have some Christmas ale.
It's pretty true, by the way, is all those special releases, man, they are hard to get.
And that would be a proper application of AI as well, figuring out your travel itinerary so that you can show up just in time to get the special release.
Well, and I have to say, this whole thing of using AI instead of surveys is a huge step in the right direction. You know, one of my favorite phrases to remind people about reality is buyers are liars. So if you ask people what they want, they will lie to you. They will say, oh, I want this, or they, you know, I would totally buy that, but then they don't, right? But right. If you look at what people are actually saying and then try to tease out, okay, well, these words mean these things, you may eliminate some of the survey agencies that are out there, or maybe they'll just adopt AI technology.
Exactly, because self-reported satisfaction surveys are notoriously horribly inaccurate because people are trying to game the system and they don't actually know what it was about that experience that made them have a good time. They try to diagnose it and tell you about it. That doesn't mean they actually understand their own emotional situation. We get happy. We get sad. AI probably is a better judge of why than we are of ourselves.
Well, that seems like a great place to end that one.
Very good. Well, cheers to you all. And thank you for listening to episode 118 of the Killin' It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killin' It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.